America, and to all of our apparently still non-radioactive listeners all over the world, you are listening to a exciting, apparently pre-nuclear edition of Let's Weekend.
The night is young.
Yeah, the night is young. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo Ninalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody. We have not mutated quite yet.
Nope. Hello.
We're still good.
We are not in the vaults yet. That has not happened.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
It's going to be a show.
You know, there are weeks when just nothing fucking happens.
Yeah.
And then one day you wake up and suddenly you realize we're all going to fucking burn. Yeah. So once again, we're now apparently under the shadow of nuclear war because of two man babies, one of whom unfortunately happens to run our country at the moment, and the other happens to be perhaps twice as crazy and basically rules over a Stalinist dictatorship that worships him as a living god. So,
yeah,
basically that translates into, we fucked, son.
Yeah.
But other than that, we are going to have some more positive stuff to talk about. We're going to be talking about the birth of hip-hop. Actually happened today, 44 years ago. We also have some Netflix news. A good deal of Netflix news, actually. We're also going to find out about Adam West's final role as Batman. A Monsters reboot. God, I did not think I would hear that name again anytime soon. And of course that now infamous Google memo. We're gonna have some things to say about that one. And weed. Yes, weed is also involved.
Yeah.
All that and more in this, well, pre-bomb falling edition of Let's Weekend. So
Bethesda was right.
Yeah, apparently they were.
Yeah.
Without further ado, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been watching some old TV shows. Coincidentally, one of them was The Munsters. Don't know how that happened, but yeah, that's a thing. I've been watching that. Watched some old Speed Racer episodes, and holy crap, those things are awful.
The old ones?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, those things were made, like, at the birth of anime.
Not only are they, like, made at the birth of anime, but then they were badly dubbed, so it's like...
That's what a lot of people forget about the old Speed Racer. There's a reason why that whole meme of, you know, going, I will go really fast and I must stay very still because animation costs money. Aww! It's based on reality.
Yeah. So those have been entertaining in some ways, not necessarily the ways that they originally intended, but hey, I'm having fun with them.
Despite the really bad animation, some of those episodes are genuinely gripping to watch.
I've been going through those. I'm also reading / listening to The Reality Dysfunction by Peter F. Hamilton. I think I mentioned that a couple of weeks back. I'm still in that, but it's God, that thing is long. It's like 41 hours, and the guy talks really slow. So, I might have to crank the speed up on my player to be able to get through that in a timely manner. But, it's not so bad. Other than that, what have I been doing? I have some vinyl collecting groups on that I'm part of on Facebook. Sometimes they do raffles. There was one for the debut album from Rush, the 40th anniversary box set edition of that. And having trouble getting the raffle closed. It was kind of lagging around. Ended up being 4 spots left, and it was like, well, what the hell? I'll close it out, take the last 4 spots. Turns out it was a good idea, because I ended up winning that. So, yeah, I'm expecting that to come in probably Monday or Tuesday, and then I'll have another one to add to my Rush collection. Still don't have Moving Picture, but that will come in time.
Seriously? You haven't gotten...
Of course, that'd be the one you don't have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have it on CD, so it's not like I can't listen to it.
Yeah,
but it's like, yeah, I gotta have it on. I gotta have that on.
That's
vinyl.
Not the point.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I have to have all of the Rush albums on vinyl at some point. So I'm just glad I won this one because it actually happened to be the most expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pleased with that.
Let me ask you: of all the Rush songs in their catalog, what is the one you like the absolute least?
I think I'm going bald.
Yeah. I was going to say Taishan, but...
Because that one makes no goddamn sense.
Mm.
Yeah, but there was some really weird stuff in those early days.
Yeah, before... Well, no, Neil Peart was...
He came in...
Was that the album before... Oh, that was on 2112? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, those first three albums were just strange. Or they were mostly a traditional rock band, and... then Neil Peart came and they became really weird. So that's okay. But yeah. And apart from that, well, I've been going through my collection of Tragically Hip CDs. I've been listening to those. Today I went through their debut EP and also their last one, Man Machine Poem, which is weird as fuck, but really good. Yeah, they're a band that if you've never really gotten into, you might want to check them out, especially if you're like a fan of REM. Yeah, you get a very, very similar type of vibe, only they're a little bit more advanced as far as their musicality goes, I find, anyway.
Yeah.
But
I've heard a lot of people sort of call Tragically Hip sort of be like Canada's REM, or at least Canada's answer to REM.
Yeah.
They're sort of part of that whole alternative sort of college rock niche. Yeah. That was like really, that started to get really big in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they went to...
Oh, I just made a dude rage quit on Ultra Street Fighter 2, sorry.
Nice. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
A lot of Twitch stuff, more friends getting affiliations. I'm almost at the requisite 50 follows myself, so I'm looking forward to that. Other than that, just been gaming and trying to keep up with a rather intense week at work.
All right. Well, what about you, Teresa?
I have been doing a variety of things, most of which I don't want to do. I've been gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah, she was back in Kentucky for a little while.
A long time. but while I was there, I did get some stuff done. I started Starship Titanic, the book, which, you know, has a very interesting history. So far so good. It's the first Terry Jones thing that I've read, so I'm really liking it. But I mean, how could you not? It's Terry Jones. Mm-hmm. While I was in Kentucky, I did get some, Final Fantasy 14 in. The Wi-Fi at the hospital was not fast enough for me to browse the internet, yet it was fast enough for me to play Final Fantasy. And
you know what? I have a friend in Tennessee who plays Final Fantasy 14 off of her tethered cell phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I was playing as a healer in my first dungeon, like in the first minute I started, I saw the disconnect icon. I'm like, oh, no.
Wasn't you, right?
It was me, but then I came back and nothing else happened. And I went on and did like 4 or 5 dungeons while my grandmother was sawing logs.
Nice.
So so I did that. I'm still playing. I started the Moonfire Fair tonight. So I like the summer event. I recall doing something kind of similar a few years ago, like maybe 2014 or something. You know, where you have to turn in battered fish and whatnot. But so far it's fun. I drove so goddamn many miles. So many miles. I think I put about 2,000 miles on my car in this trip. And, you know, I mean, I lived there for a long time, and I realize it takes for fucking ever to get from point A to point B.
Well, yeah, because you got to go all through those damn mountains.
Not that part of Kentucky. That part's flat. That part is flat as a board.
Flatter than the Kanto Plains.
Yeah. Except for Land Between the Lakes. That's got a little bit of hill, you know, hilliness going through there. But yeah, I also went to Nashville, and those hills are too.
It's a bit of a detour.
Well, I had to take her for a biopsy, and you know, you got to drive 2.5 hours to get there because that's the way it goes. Those hills are too fucking big. They should not be allowed. They should not be allowed.
Dynamite them or something.
God, yeah. You made a mistake.
Well, you know, they did dynamite through some of them because I drove through them. But, you know, while I was gone, I was exposed to a shit ton of things that I don't like or that I'm not necessarily used to.
All right. Give us a list.
Justin Bieber, that song Esposito.
Oh, my God. That's my mom's ringtone. It drives me freaking nuts.
Dude, the radio station down there that I used to listen to when I was in school, it's awful. It's nothing but schlocky bubblegum drivel and lowest common denominator music. And that is the anthem of that fucking station. Esposito. You know what? You don't even fucking know Spanish. Jesus Christ. So, okay.
What the fuck? You're Canadian. Stop it.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, is awful. And all the other music there was awful, too. And then people playing country fucking music. Oh God.
And not the good country, but, like, the shitty bro country.
No, yeah.
Or if not that, the twangy, like, good old boy type country, like fucking Alan Jackson or shit like that.
Yeah, well, it's all bad. It's all bad. I just paint that with broad strokes. Bad, bad, bad. Cable news.
I thought bad country was the only kind there is.
Yeah, pretty much. So much cable news. You know, I see that here and there. Well, today I went out for sushi because we got back and I was having goddamn sushi. That's how it goes. And, you know, it's just TV shows that I don't like to watch. Stuff on in the hospital that I don't like to watch. Hardee's. Which, you know, amazingly they have good fries, so I'm gonna give them a shout out for that one.
You, what's wrong with Hardee's?
I don't eat that shit. They don't have it. There's no more Hardee's up here. So they don't have it. And when I was in college, I lived off of their hot ham and cheeses, and no, just no. I guess I ate it too much in college because it was the only thing that was open 24/7. So, little town full of little people. And then really loud, drawling Southern men who grew up driving tractors. And like this one guy in the hospital, he was at the end of the wing. I swear to God, I could have heard him 3 floors down through the glass and the brick and the concrete and in the parking lot. He was so fucking loud.
Yeah, welcome to my life.
I know. Yeah, 2 days ago I was trying to eat just a peanut butter jelly at the cafeteria at Vanderbilt in Nashville. And there was this guy way over there, and I'm like, holy shit, dude, you just told me your entire life and you're not talking to me. It was just... Obviously, I was a little out of patience at that point. I did not whip my sandwich at him because I was kind of hungry.
and I you can't thought about it, far. Though.
Oh, my God, yes. I thought about just going outside and eating, but it was kind of hot. But now I'm home and shit's good and, you know, well, hopefully shit's good. But I hope to be doing a lot more than just like a lot of the gaming that I got done there was casual gaming, you know, playing solitaire and Uno and grandma shit. Not my grandmother. Well, yeah, she does play that shit too. So, yeah, that was a lot, but I guess that's 2 weeks worth of stuff.
Basically. Yeah. It's all crammed in the one.
Yeah.
It's been an eventful couple of weeks for you. So I,
it has.
We're glad you're back.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm too.
Yeah. All right, well, Chris, it's your turn.
Okay, so I finally got around to watching Fate of the Furious, which has a lot of great set-piece moments in it. There's a great car chase sequence with a bunch of autonomous cars. And it almost looks like a Trackmania sort of a composite level, where you see like all the cars converging down these streets, which is just ridiculous. The story is stupid. I don't even really understand it all that much. I don't even know where they were most of the time. They're just in, oh, this is big city, and they're going to just fuck shit up with these cars. But there's a great scene where Jason Statham is just kicking a bunch of ass and shooting people while holding a baby and doing some great stuff with that, as well as they do a great job of making sure the baby has the right expression to everything that's going on.
Oh, shit.
So he like takes some shots in the back with his bulletproof vest and turns around to the guy's like, "You were going to shoot a baby?" And just proceeds to set him down, turn him away. He's like, "You're not going to want to see this." And you see him in the background just bashing his head into a desk over and over again. It's like, okay, this is some good shit here. And it's really fun and ridiculous. And obviously the whole overarching story of, oh, Dom has gone rogue and gets a huge surprise. Not really. There's a reason why he does what he does. And it's the same one it's always, because somebody's got dirt on him. Otherwise, a lot of the cool stunt stuff in there. That whole thing with the autonomous cars, there's some cool sequences where they have sort of blockade is driving through the city. They're driving by a car garage, and so they just have these cars activate and just drive out of the windows of their floors onto this blockade. And then also the other cars just come crashing in to kind of barricade them in. It's really, really awesome scene.
Sounds like Demon.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. As for gaming stuff, I played some Comet Crash 2 that's on the PS4 now. It's a weird sequel to a game that I was pretty sure nobody knew about. That came out on the PS3, I think, 2008, 2009-ish. That was kind of like if you took a tower defense game, but made it more of an RTS. Hmm. So you're laying down towers, but you're also putting down these couple of units that essentially generates units that you can spawn. And so that's kind of your resource gathering. And so you're essentially trying to build up these resources of troops and lay down towers, as well as just grabbing comets, taking them over to your own towers to destroy for money, or various other things. You're kind of just trying to just beat each level, get ratings up to, I think, 5 stars. And it was nice having that before launch, when I was number one on many of the levels I was playing, and then doing the video, I think it was shortly after the UK launch. So a bunch of like British and European flags on the leaderboards that were better than mine. As I was doing the video, I was like, oh, must be out now, because I'm not number one on most of these maps anymore. Mm. But it's a really fun game, especially sort of having like an RTS on a console that actually works really well for console controller stuff. That was fun to play, and I'm looking forward to putting more time into it. I finally got a chance to play Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. That game is really intense.
Yeah, that's what people have been telling me.
Yeah, so when you start up that game, it specifically tells you, hey, put in some headphones in your controller and play it like that. Because one of the core things about that game is that the main character, Senua, has some mental issues. I think psychosis at least, maybe some other stuff, but they worked with a bunch of mental health experts who helped them sort of figure out the right way to do a lot of this stuff. And so definitely like the first 30 minutes or so that I played of that, her psychosis has a lot of just voices playing. Not like incoherent or anything. A lot of them, just as she's starting this journey into hell. It's H-E-L, like the Norse hell.
Yeah.
and they describe a lot of the different places in Norse mythology. And you're hearing a lot of voices saying, go back, no, keep going forward. And it's just constantly going. It's like, man, this is really intense.
Ew, that sounds creepy.
Yeah, that's just for 30 minutes. That imagine a person who has to go through shit like that every day.
Yeah. That's why I only played about 30 minutes of it.
Yeah.
It seems like a game I really want to keep playing, but also it's very intense that I want to keep it in smaller sessions.
Did you hear about what happened with Jim Sterling with that game?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that on Sunday.
Yeah, it's literally like the first time, but basically we're going to talk about it on Sunday, but basically just real quickly, it's the first time he's ever like revoked a previous review and replaced it with another one.
Wow.
It has to do with like he managed to come into like what was a sort of a game breaking bug completely by accident. Yeah. And we'll talk about it more on Sunday, but
yeah, I remember seeing he gave it a one, but so he revised his review then?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a seven, yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, basically because of that bug, he couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's the whole thing about, oh, every time you die, you get some sort of corruption.
Yeah, that goes.
And eventually it might erase your save.
Which yeah, that's bullshit.
People are freaking out. And
for the record, don't worry about it. It's actually bullshit.
I wish
specifically say that just to fuck with you.
Yeah, I wish people didn't freak out like that and get offended and all that. Because I would have liked to have gone into this not knowing that that was a thing.
Yeah.
Because the way they introduce it is really, really cool. Because you get into your actual first fights and they give you like a no-win scenario.
Yeah.
And then it's really interesting. I don't really want to give it away, but they show this like corruption thing going on with her. And it's a really well done game. And I've also been playing more, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, tried out some of the first person only servers, which might be where I can, do some damage. My first match, I got 2 kills. And it really made sense for the way that your view is restricted in that mode. Since you can only see in first person, you don't have very much peripheral vision.
Yeah.
So my first match, I land near a house, get some stuff, most importantly a shotgun, run over into the circle, find a couple of houses next to each other. As I approach one, I hear a guy rooting around in there. And so I'm like, oh, crap. I'm going to go into this other house where there's nothing in there. Or there's nobody in there. And I can hear him running around. Eventually, he comes to this house as he's done looting the other one. And I am not directly behind the door, but off to the side. He opens the door, steps in, boom, done. One hit, one shot down. I immediately move over, shut the door, and start looting his crate. He's got like health and all this good stuff in there. And eventually I go hide into the bathroom and just wait it out because I am a good bit into the circle that as it's starting to restrict. And I just listen as people drive by, a couple shots, eventually hear people running around, one going through the house. There's 2 doors to go in and out, so one going through one door into the other. And eventually somebody decides to start looting and comes into the bathroom, boom, one shot down. And that's real good. Real satisfying with the shotgun, having not had a ton of luck with those in the past. And that just is really fun when you are able to take advantage of the limitations that that mode imposes upon you, which is really nice. I've been playing more of the regular modes as well. And that game is just a lot of fun. I had a weird moment where I've mentioned how occasionally the buildings and such won't render right until like a 20, 30 seconds after I land. So I'm sitting here watching these kind of messed up 3D Google Maps houses as I'm trying to wait for them to actually render so I can get in.
Hmm.
I landed in this quarry, and so there I was moving around. I saw the rocks, sort of the rocks on the sides of this area were not rendering. I didn't know they were there because I'd never been in that area. So I go over there, and then they just all of a sudden start rendering. And then I'm stuck in these rocks. I'm sitting there like, what? I start trying to do everything I can to kind of glitch my way back out of this and start to worry about, oh, I'm just stuck here. I'm going to have to die from the blue, the big blue electric grid taking me. But and I have one guy actually run past me. I don't know if he could actually see me or if or what, but eventually I glitch my way out, go get some stuff, and last for a little while, I think until like the top 30. I think it was like, I didn't even play, I think it was in the 60s left when I finally regained control of the character. So I managed to last pretty long for not being able to do anything for the first few minutes of that game, which was pretty interesting. They added honking to the game, so you can honk with some of the cars, which is a good scare tactic, because beyond just being able to hear the cars driving around, and you can sit there and honk, which I saw, I think it was Giant Bomb's thing, where they got down to the top 10 with, I think, two people, and I think there was one group that had at least three or four people left. And they had one guy just literally in a car driving around a circle honking his horn, just trying to drive people out, trying to draw people out so that his teammates could shoot them. And that was some of the best stuff I had seen. It's like, okay, you're just supposed to be just a stupid guy just driving around to draw out any other stupid people that are out here, which is a way that I got into the top 10 or top 5. I described that before where
you've done that.
I drove around a circle with a car. Drew out one guy, got around to the rock on the other side of him, took him out, and then immediately got shot after that and was number 4, I think. So it's a tactic that works if you get the right scenario. So that's been a lot of fun to play. It's been interesting watching how the marketplace, the Steam marketplace for some of that stuff is going on. So those, the paid, or the Battle Royale crates that need a key to unlock, the crates are selling for about $2 now. So it's not really that much money in the grand scheme. The keys are $2.50 themselves. So I've seen people actually just buy up a bunch of those crates instead of having to grind up. Because you can only get, I think, 6 of those crates in a week. Because it gets progressively more expensive as you get them. So that's sort of like a really cheap and easier way to get stuff. I know Jeff Gerstmann did that to get the tracksuit from Battle Royale, the yellow tracksuit.
Mm-hmm.
Which also means he has a bunch of the other items, which you have to wait like a week to sell them. So he can make his money back probably just from selling that stuff. The Twitch Prime stuff, that stuff is all worth money, which I sold most of that in... I think I got about $8 for selling that stuff. If you had the crate and you didn't open it, it was like $50, I think, last I checked. Just because that was like a one-month thing. So there's a limited amount out there, which was pretty crazy that people are willing to pay that. Though there's also like items that are $100 plus that apparently people are buying. I don't know why.
People have more money than sense.
Yeah, maybe those are people that farm a lot of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but yeah, that's a game that I really like playing, and also just watching the marketplace, seeing what people are paying for stuff. Because there's like most of the normal stuff, like I bought like a hat, it was 3 cents, it's nothing. Because I just have a bunch of just spare credit from selling cards and such, so it really doesn't cost me anything to buy those small things.
Yeah.
Especially when it's just like, I like to have a head on my character instead of this stupid balaclava Twitch Prime thing. That thing I sold for like $350. The worst looking thing out of all of that was $350 I sold, which is great. I think it's like $250 now, so I got in while it was good.
Yeah.
Been doing a lot more YouTube stuff. Let's see, on the sites, we got a video for Smashbox Arena, which is a PSVR multiplayer game. It's very much kind of a room scale-esque one. If you've seen like Rec Room's paintball multiplayer, it's very similar to that, where you have these two guns that you can pull in these bolts, these like electric balls, to shoot at other people, and you're just trying to get... kill everybody on the other team, which is 3v3. You can also teleport around. That's your main way of getting around. But if you grab, use both guns to grab orbs, you can't teleport. You need one of the guns to teleport. So it's sort of an interesting mechanic there. Also, there's not really anybody playing it. So... But the smart thing they did is you fill in any open slots in multiplayer with bots. So there's nothing really stopping you from playing it, which is a smart move on their part. They have some dumb trophies. I think 1,000 kills in multiplayer as well as 1,000 kills in the campaign, which the campaign is just, hey, here's 3 NPC bots that spout off like a catchphrase before you start. There's no real story or anything to it. But it's still neat. The funny thing with the videos, the game crashed. I hardlocked the PS4 as I was trying to get into the multiplayer, which fucks with your vision because the image freezes. So instead of like moving your head to look around, it's the same image. So immediately I had to pull the visor out and sort of look at the screen. It's like, oh, okay, this is frozen. I had to pull it off before it just destroyed me. Yeah, I got it all restarted up and did the multiplayer match, and everything was okay after that. That was probably the worst thing I've had happen with the VR stuff. But, yeah, there's also a Comet Crash video up on the site as well. That game is pretty cool, as I've said. As for my personal channel, I did a video on Atom Universe, which is one of the spin-off PlayStation Home games from some of the people that worked on games and such in that. And it's still early access. I think it's like 0.8 something. So there's a lot of parts of the game where it's like, oh, this area is under construction. Like, oh, great. But there's still like bowling. There's some arcade games that are kind of like Winamp flash game kind of level stuff. I think they have a shmup, they have a dual stick shooter, and an Arkanoid clone, which is all the sort of stuff you expect. And there's also, what else was there? There's bowling. There's that. There's like a horse betting game. There's like cyber horses racing, and you go up and pick a horse to bet on. It's weird, stupid stuff, but also the rest of the game is kind of like a rave. I had a big giant mask on that was an emoji mask, as well as butterfly wings. I could get like a Cybertron kind of suit on and all sorts of weird shit like that. They just blare music in every single area, so obviously that video got content ID hit. Right away, there's no way to turn off the music, even though I think it mentioned somewhere that you might. And I turned off the audio in one of the settings, but I think it turns off sound effects or something like that. But yeah, that was annoying, but otherwise the video was fine. VR game I played was Surgeon Simulator VR, which is actually really good. You've got better controls since you can actually sort of move your hands directly.
Yeah.
And have pretty easy sort of grip controls to it, which then just opens it up to you just can do silly things directly and have fun that way and just put your own humor into it instead of, oh, these controls are a little bit weird, so I just do wacky things inadvertently of what I'm trying to do. So you can actually perform the surgeries kind of easily. But the one problem I had with the game was just trying to figure out a good place to actually play it from as far as in relation to the camera. So I had to constantly like recenter it. I think eventually I have to find a sweet spot, but right now that was the one issue in the video. Is there a point where I cut out all the organs and broke the ribs and all that in this guy's chest and was getting ready to put the heart in, and I went over to reach for the box, and it's giving me like the, oh, the camera's not tracking you anymore thing. It's like, well, okay, now I have to figure out a way to recenter this so I can actually grab this box and throw the heart in and complete the surgery. And I was doing that a couple times in the video, but otherwise it was pretty fun. And despite having like increased controls, I still had like D ratings on these surgeries. But it was still fun being able to like actually pick up the needles full of the good drugs that stop the patient from bleeding so much. It sort of stops their blood loss, but also you can stick it into your hand and get high, which is pretty good. as well as just grabbing weird items like a laser, which you definitely don't want because I think once you pick it up, it's activated for good. But and sort of the way that's good with VR is the physics sandbox thing. You can just pick up, you know, you cut out their stomach, just go throw it across the room. Just do that stuff. Or I cut out this guy's intestines and I just laid it on his face. also, at the beginning of every surgery, I just slapped him on the face a couple times. It's like, all right, buddy, we're going to get you going. Okay, good. Which is just the fun part of that whole game. And you can even mess around in like the menus where it's sort of at a reception desk kind of thing. And I know there's like codes to type on the phone to get some things. I found one code in a can, a pop can. It's just like 93 when you look inside of it. It's like, oh, that's something. But I have to find the other codes. It's a lot of fun as a game. The anniversary I celebrated for on this week is Papers, Please. Turns 4 this week, which I'm still waiting for that Vita version, and Lucas Pope still says it's coming. I think he had a tweet in July, I think, saying it's still coming. There's no ETA, but that still would be a cool version of that game to have. But
is
otherwise,
there even going to be a production slot for him when he finishes it?
I assume so. I think they could fit Lucas Pope on there. But yeah, that game is really fun. And I saw that he released a trailer of the short film based on Papers, Please, which the production photos seem really silly. Sort of, this guy who is what the player character is. I don't think he has a name. I think that's how far they went to portray him as the player. He doesn't even have a name, but he's sort of in this booth with his desk and stamps and all that. And you can see like the glass and all that, and a couple doors for the people go in and out. And I don't know what the hell they're going to do with that movie, but that's going to be an interesting thing to see. I think that's about it. Played more Slime Rancher. That's always good stuff. That's been about it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, so yeah, my primary gaming for this week has been entirely Final Fantasy XIV. I am now at level 39. And of course, already to get to the next part of the story, I got to be level 40. So, yeah, that is, like I said this on Facebook, I'm still loving this game and every moment of it.
It does happen.
Yeah, once you get past level 30, it can be kind of a struggle to keep leveling up.
You have to learn to love the dungeons.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Dungeon roulette, that's your
friend. But I think the battle design is good enough that you can.
Yeah. But anyway, but yeah, so I've already gotten rid of four of the primals. I'm fixing, once I get up to level 40, I'll be getting ready to go out and get number 5, and then after that I'll only have one more to do, and of course, the way Final Fantasy stories go, I'm not even sure if that's going to be near the end of A Realm Reborn.
You'll find out.
Yeah, I guess I will, because Heaven's Ward's got to start up at some point.
But, I don't even think I've started Heaven's Ward.
Yeah. But, anyway, so yeah, I'm still doing that. Of course, I'm still doing a lot of reading. I got a copy of it's what I think is essential reading. It's called The Devil's Bargain by Joshua Green. And what it is it's basically details exactly how Steve Bannon went from being, you know, some bullshit bank guy into the White House advisor. And it's basically, you know, just all the shady shit he did, how he... Like, a lot of people don't know, like, okay, one of the things that he used to do was he was part owner of a company that was I think it was located in China, that was gold farming for World of Warcraft. And apparently that's where he first started to realize sort of the alt-right and what it could become. And, you know, of course, right around the time all that fell through was around the time he was able to take over Breitbart. And it's good reading. It's essential reading because it basically shows you, basically, yeah, Steve Bannon is the fucking devil. And he has absolutely no fucking morals. Yeah. watching documentaries. I watched, just a couple of days ago, one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. People had been telling me about it all the time, saying you needed to watch it. It's from the mid-70s. It's called Harlan County, USA. And it's about the 1973 coal miner strike. And holy shit, that is some intense
film. Wasn't that one really bloody? That strike?
Well, there was the one that happened in the 1930s that they specifically called Bloody Harlan. But this is, this was the other one. And basically what it was is it was a, basically what happened is they were in a primary dispute with the Duke Company, you know, the people who, you know, the coal operators, over a contract that had a no strike clause in it. Or I think it was like a no union clause. And, you know, obviously they thought that, you know, that would unfairly get put, leverage on the mining companies and not, you know, the actual miners. So they all voted and decided to join up with the United Mine Workers. And, shit just kind of escalates from there. You know, it shows the Duke Company people are just absolute shitbags. They are absolutely callous. You know, one of the old miners early on in the movie tells about a story back when he was in the 30s, when he was working, you know, 18, 20-hour days, and... You know, he tells a story about, you know, the guy they're talking to is he's an old man and he's dying from black lung. And he's talking about how, you know, back when he was, you know, a teenager working in the mines, and he, you know, the foreman, I guess it was the boss man, as he called him, came up and he said, make sure when you're getting out of the mine, make sure you're watching those mules that are pulling the cart. Because, you know, back then they used to have the... mules hooked up to the mine carts to pull them out of the mine. You know, now it's mostly automated, but and you know, he said, make sure that a rock don't fall on those mules' head. You gotta make sure the mules are okay. He's like, well, okay, but like, what happens if? What about me? What if a rock falls on my head? And the boss man says, well, you know, we can always get another man, but you gotta buy a mule. So, and eventually, what happens is everything just sort of escalates. Some of the once they start organizing and picketing, of course, the miners start trying to bring in scab labor. Mm-hmm. And some of the, you know, company men start showing up with revolvers. And so, of course, everybody's like, well, shit, the folks in the union are like, well, shit, they're showing up with guns. We're going to have to show up with guns, too. And then, like, one late, like, I think it's like late at night during the dark, some company men show up and they start firing on the strikers. there's even this one famous shot of this dude showing up in a orange Suburban waving a gun at the camera person. And, you know, and then eventually, you know, they all eventually have to get together, and there's like a whole thing afterwards where they're talking about, it's like, you know, and they got this woman named, I think her name was Lois Smith or something. And she's like, you know, it's like, if they're going to get violent, we're going to have to get violent too. You fight fire with fire. And, yeah, it just kind of escalates from there. The whole thing, like, lasted for over, like, 4 years.
Jeez.
So, yeah. So the movie only, you know, the movie only shows like a short span of it, but it gets pretty ugly pretty fast. And what Pete, and what's really especially surprising is, remember, this is the mid 70s. You know, this ain't like the turn of the century mm-hmm. or the early 20s. And no, this is like literally within like 45, 47 years ago. And, you know, don't think that this shit can't happen today, because it sure as hell can.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, so, yeah, that's what I've been up to this week. So, has anybody got anything else they want to add?
No, not really.
All good here.
All right, well, I guess then it is once again time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And you know what, folks? We're going to be getting into some heavy shit in a little bit. So I thought for this week for Brandon's Random Factoids, we talk about something that everybody can like. Pirates! Hey, pirates! Guys, you know, Rare's coming out with Sea of Thieves. Ubisoft's coming out with Skull and Bones. I thought, you know, why don't we take a look at some old pirate flags? You know, the Jolly Roger. Now, of course, when everybody thinks about the Jolly Roger, they picture something like this right here. That's the classic right there. The skull, death's head, with a cross. I guess those are femur bones underneath it. But, so, and yeah, in that particular image, that particular thing, you know, the skull and the crossbones, that's been around since the Middle Ages. And it's basically a reminder to anybody, meant to be a reminder to anyone who sees it, that it means, remembers that you will die. Doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, at some point we all die. And it's believed at some point right around the turn of the 17th, 18th century, that pirates in and around the Caribbean and in and around Barbados, they all started to begin coming up with the idea of using a black flag with some sort of Jolly Roger on it. Now, the thing was is that the Jolly Rogers were often, you know, that right there, what I just posted is the classic, but in fact, Jolly Rogers were often very varied, and because, you know, pirate captains tend to be kind of major glory seekers, a lot of them tended to have their own unique flag. For example, this one right, oh, yeah, you'll have to click on that one. Calico Jack Rackham, a.k.a. the pirate captain who was the lover of Anne Bonny and Mary Read, he had a Jolly Roger that was a death's head with crossed cutlasses. That was the one that he used as his symbol. But that in and of itself is actually pretty, shall we say, lax compared to some of the other variances. For example, Black Bart Roberts, he actually had two flags. One of them was basically a flag that was basically him and Death carrying an hourglass. And of course, the hourglass is meant to be a symbol of the fact that time is running out. But eventually, he would replace it with another flag, which was, again, an image of him standing on the skulls of a Barbadian man and a... Let's see, what was the other one? A Martinican man. And it actually, the flag actually has ABH under one and AMH on another to mean a Barbadian's head and a Martican's head. Again, these could get kind of intense. One of the biggest, like, serious shit bags of the pirate era, a guy who was genuinely just a bad human being, was Edward Lowe. And his was particularly ghoulish. It was a black flag with a bright red skeleton on it. Now, just imagine seeing that out in the middle of the Atlantic. You'd probably shit your pants in terror. Which was kind of the point of a lot of these flags. Sometimes they would get weirdly, overly detailed, like, say, Christopher Moody's flag, which was a bright red flag with a winged hourglass, a skull and crossbones, and a white arm carrying a sword. Like, that's just a little too busy, dude. Cut it down. But of course, none of them could manage an intensity and just sheer metalness than, of course, Edward Teach, a.k.a. Blackbeard, whose famous flag was an image of the devil toasting himself and spearing a bleeding heart.
All right.
Mm-hmm. because Blackbeard.
Yeah.
If you played Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, you know the type of guy that Blackbeard was.
Yeah, he was a jerk. Putting it mildly.
Now, it's actually been theorized that the reason that a lot of these flags tended to have sort of similar themes or similar ideas, almost uniform, is because a lot of these pirates tended to be parts of like these sort of unofficial syndicates that tended to operate in and around, like for example, guys like, Calico Jack, Blackbeard, Ed Lowe, they all operated in and around the Caribbean. And since they all kind of had an unofficial partnership, it would obviously mean that a lot of their flags would have sort of similar elements to them. But the one thing you also have to remember is that a lot of what we know about pirates is almost entirely based on one source, and that is on Captain Charles Johnson's A General History of the Pirates, which was published in 1724. And, to this day, nobody even knows who Captain Charles Johnson actually was. A lot of people think he was Daniel Defoe, the guy who wrote Robinson Crusoe. So, take anything that we just showed you, just take it with a grain of salt. All right? And, So, that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Arr.
Exactly. By the way, another quick thing. The reason that whole R thing, a lot of people believe that sort of came about because a lot of these pirates tended to be either Northern English or Welsh. And the R is sort of meant to be like a crude representation of their accent. Yeah. By the way, Sea of Thieves. Holy shit, I cannot wait to play that game. Doesn't that game look like so much fun?
It does, if you can find a group that aren't complete idiots.
Kind of like actual pirates. All right. Now it's time for the show proper. And we're going to start off with our asshole of the week. And hey, can you guess what our asshole of the week is? You get three guesses. And the last two don't count.
Fire.
Wicked Witch of the West.
Well, yeah, there's really only one person it could have been, right? it's your president again. Returning.
Yes, it is Donald.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, but see, there's a big difference between then and that one. This one isn't risking nuclear hellfire. Okay, so, oh God, where should we begin? So earlier this week, it was discovered that the North Koreans had apparently come to the point where they had been able to manufacture ICBM missiles that could carry a nuclear warhead. And apparently these things could reach as far as the coastal, as almost near the coast of the United States. Now the thing is, and you need to understand this, the North Koreans are master bullshit talkers. And they have been for over 50 years.
Well, weren't they like the best basketball players that ever walked the face of the planet? Right?
Well, their current, the current great leader doesn't have an anus.
And apparently there are unicorns in North Korea. They're the only place where they exist in the world.
Yeah. How does he not have an anus? Is that why he's so fat?
Not even gonna go there. Nope.
Now, anyway, the point is, if this was anybody else in power at the time, they would have just brushed it off. They wouldn't have completely ignored it, because even if it is a bullshit threat, you still want to take it somewhat seriously on the small chance that they might actually be telling the truth. As infinitesimally small as that might be. You just sort of act like everything's normal. You get your people to do what they do best. Talk to people. People talk. And everything would kind of blow over eventually. But no. Oh, no.
That's not enough for the Donald.
So what did he do? Well, he apparently went off script. And he said that they need to be careful or they would, quote, see fire and fury the likes the world has never seen.
And power. Don't forget power.
And power.
Because he said that, too.
Yeah. And I think that was sort of like the big holy shit moment of the week.
Yeah. I this is direct result of the G20 summit when he was wandering mm-hmm. around aimlessly, mm-hmm. being ignored yeah. by pretty much everybody.
And so then the North Koreans, being the North Koreans, said, "Oh, or you trying to throw hands, bro?
Mm-hmm.
With your tiny hands?"
Now we've got a pissing contest.
Yeah, so now they've basically announced, they've more or less put out plans to launch their missiles, 4 ICBM, Intercontinental Ballistic Missiles, off the coast of Guam.
Yeah.
Which I want to point out, Guam is...
Where does that land on the list of quality tactical targets?
Well, Guam actually does have American military bases there. Mm-hmm. So, and the people who live there, even though they're technically not a state, they are American citizens.
Yep.
Well, I get that part, but...
Again, you have to remember, this is mostly for Kim Jong-un's, ego.
Yeah.
Hey, found one we can reach.
Yeah. And, so what... And you think, oh shit, because this, okay, again, The North Koreans have threatened shit like this for decades. And, you know, if they, this is, you know, they've shit talked all the time. And this is the first time in a long time that they've, not only apparently have the capabilities to, they seem to actually have picked out a target. And, oh, it must be so fun to be living in Guam right now.
Where they are actually giving instructions on how to survive a nuclear attack.
Yes, they're...
specific instructions.
Yes, basically you've got 14 minutes. That is straight, like, that is straight up the headline of the Guam National Newspaper. 14 minutes. And at this point, you'd be thinking, you know, at this point, if Donald was smart, he's not, he would have just shut up, just shut his trap.
He won't.
And let his administration handle it.
Yeah.
Just focus on something else. If you want to go back and start tweeting about how Hillary Clinton's a bitch or something, go ahead and do that. I would much prefer that over what he did instead.
It's almost like he has an administration full of people who don't have diplomatic experience.
Really? How could that happen?
He then turned around and said, maybe Fire and Fury wasn't tough enough.
He fucking what? Please keep in mind, I've missed some of the news recently.
Yeah, he basically he just kept kind of escalating it.
You remember who this is, right?
Yeah, you remember who this is, right?
Does he... Jesus Christ.
No, he is not physically... He is physically incapable of backing down. He has to double up on everything.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
I can only see this ending two ways. First way is North Korea launches a nuke at Guam. We knock it down and send five more their way.
Yeah.
And the other way this ends is they launch an attack at Guam, successfully strike, and South Korea becomes an island.
Well, I could see another alternative. The rest of the world steps in and pulls these motherfuckers out of power. I mean, really?
You mean just sort of... Put black bags over their heads, pluck them out of where they are, drop them in the middle of a field in Kansas somewhere.
You know, wish them to a cornfield. Yeah, why not?
And,
there are a lot of places they can rot.
Yeah, and it gets even worse when you start to realize that there are some, Trump sycophants, pastors and ideologues basically giving him the go-ahead to just straight up vaporize Pyongyang. There was Pastor Robert Jeffrey said God had given Trump the authority to wipe out North Korea. Hannity on his radio show, who weirdly enough ended up being the sane one in the conversation, was saying, if we went nuclear, there'd be a lot of millions of dead people. And the other guy said, well, yeah, but they'd mostly be North Koreans.
That's not better.
That's so insensitive.
That's what a sociopath sounds like.
Yeah, sociopath.
Like, textbook case.
Now, do you know what a lot of this is reminding me of? Because we all lived through it. The run-up to the war in Iraq.
Got a point.
Yeah. History is probably going to repeat itself.
Except the worst thing is that both of the asshats in the situation lack any kind of empathy or conscience and are more than willing to annihilate millions of people in their little dick waving contest. Dick measuring contest.
Yeah.
Now, there's a bunch of questions that come with here, but really the big wild card in here is China. Because let's be honest, the Chinese really don't like North Korea. Well, they don't like the Kims, specifically. Or Kim Jong. They haven't liked them since Kim Jong-il was in power. Kim Il-sung was a guy that they could sort of deal with and was sort of a nice buffer that they had against, South Korea and the capitalist West. But Kim Jong-il kind of took the crazy from his dad and upped it to 11, and his son, the current Kim Jong-un, is a little even worse.
Because he's never known anything else.
Exactly. So, you know, it's completely possible, you know, like, okay, so we've been getting sort of conflicting info on this, because on the one hand, China sort of said publicly, more or less announced, at least that's what the news is saying, is that if their ally North Korea is attacked, they will respond. But on Chinese state TV, they've said that China is not going to intervene. So the question is, who are you going to believe?
Which part of China are you going to believe?
You know, I can honestly see it being the Chinese position that Trump is about to remove a troublesome burden for them.
And they're more than willing to look the other way and let it happen. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I can see that.
Yeah.
They could do something completely unpredictable, too, that has nothing to do with either of those two things. I don't know what, but...
I got it. They take him out themselves.
Like just a sniper or some dude puts drops some cyanide in his kimchi and he's out.
Yeah, it's China. What have you got?
Yeah. One thing I can say, though, is if a conflict does happen, no matter what happens, South Korea is going to get screwed.
Yeah.
Because either they end up getting a nice big package of uranium going off in the middle of Seoul, or North Korea does fall, and then suddenly all of these North Korean refugees are going to start coming over the mountains.
And it's an already crowded country.
And what are you going to do with millions of people with no employment skills or, you know, anything really that has known nothing else but the, you know, life in the North Korean autocracy? I mean, I'm not saying, like, necessarily, like, you know, they're going to take their jobs or any of that bullshit. Mostly just sort of stating the kind of sad truth here.
These are people. Where are we going to put them?
Yeah. And it's going to be, you know, both the U.S. and China are going to have to come together on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's going to be interesting...
And maybe post-Trump that will be possible.
Yeah. Well, there have been people that are sort of, you know, before all this brouhaha went down, there was sort of little signs showing up that people are sort of getting ready for a post-Trump, you know, 2018 or 2020.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're already, you know, there are presidential candidates going to be running against Trump on the Republican ticket.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coming up 2020.
If you think Trump isn't going to get primaried, if he's still in office by then.
Yeah. And there's been, you know, little hints and pieces that Mike Pence is getting geared up to do something. I mean, he's been denying it like crazy. But
behind closed doors, he's going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I might have to take the wheel, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Well, I've talked about the 45th Amendment before.
Yeah. Well, I don't think 25th. It's an oh shit with him. I think it's an oh goody, oh goody, oh goody, it's my turn.
He's so not ready.
And yet that still somehow makes him more qualified than Trump.
Yes. Because regardless of anything else, he may be a terrible politician with atrocious positions, but he's an experienced politician.
Like I said last time,
he is
time,
competent.
You know, as much as I will hate it, we can handle another 3.5 years of George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Just as long, because at least George W. Bush wasn't stupid enough that he was willing to launch an all-out nuclear war.
Hmm.
Now, you know, or at least intentionally.
Yeah.
Unintentionally, however.
Yeah, unintentionally, that almost happened. So, yeah.
So, all I'm going to say is it's going to be an interesting week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because, I mean, he keeps escalating shit like this. Something's got to happen.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to step in and de-escalate this thing.
Yep.
Well, what have I been saying? That he's surrounded by a bunch of people whose chief loyalty, not in his cabinet, but the other sort of outside of his circle, but that he has to work with out of necessity, just because that's the way things work.
Yeah,
whose first responsibility is to the union.
Yeah.
Not to the president.
Yeah, and somebody...
That's a conflict of interest right now.
Yeah, somebody has to be his Brutus.
Yep.
You know, because I honestly can't see this happening any other way than, you know, going out like Caesar.
Yep.
Not necessarily in that exact manner, but...
Wouldn't it be nice if it were an accidental Brutus in the form of Kelly Conway? Where she opens her mouth and says something just so horrible, admits to something so horrible that he's done.
People actually think that's Paul Manafort's going to end up being that one.
Could be.
Because, you know, he had it. Okay, other short news. His house got raided by the FBI this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. It actually happened back last month in July.
Yeah,
but,
2 weeks ago.
It was a no-knock raid. And, yeah, they're just now starting to talk about it. Moving on from that, all I'm going to say is it's going to be an interesting week, so stay tuned.
Yep.
And now, to get all of that just absolutely horrible shit out of our mouths, get taste out of it, we've got our hero of the week. And it comes from NASA.
One of the few parts of the government that is actually sane.
Yeah. So recently NASA announced that they've got an opening for a position as what's called a PPO, a Planetary Protection Officer. So basically, I'm actually not sure. What is a PPO supposed to be?
So instead of it being like a, say, Mass Effect style thing that as everybody thinks about.
Yeah.
It's actually about preventing microbes from sort of soil samples and all that sort of stuff we get from the moon, Mars, comets, or other things.
Yeah.
From infecting us over here in Earth, as well as vice versa. Things we send out from infecting these other worlds and planetary bodies and such.
Yeah.
And, so they got an application letter from a 9-year-old named Jack Davis.
Yep.
Want to read his letter?
Yeah, I should. August 3rd, 2017. Dear NASA, my name is Jack Davis, and I would like to apply for the Planetary Protection Officer job. I may be 9, but I think I would be fit for the job. One of the reasons is my sister says I am an alien. Also, I've seen almost all the space and alien movies I can see. I have also seen the show Marvel Agents, and Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and hope to see the movie Men in Black. I am great at video games. I am young, so I can learn to think like an alien.
Aww.
Sincerely, Jack Davis, Guardian of the Galaxy, 4th grade.
And he got a nice reply from NASA.
Yep.
Should read that.
Yeah, actually from the director of the Planetary Science Division, Mr. Dr. James L. Green. Says, Dear Jack, I hear you are a Guardian of the Galaxy and that you're interested in being a NASA Planetary Protection Officer. That's great. Our PPO position is really cool and is very important work. It's about protecting Earth from tiny microbes when we bring back samples from the moon, asteroids, and Mars. It's also protecting other planets and moons from our germs as we responsibly explore the solar system. We are always looking for bright future scientists and engineers to help us, so I hope you will study hard and do well in school. We hope to see you here at NASA one of these days. Sincerely, Dr. James L. Green, Director, Planetary Science Division.
That was nice.
And I guess they also called him.
Yeah.
They got a picture here. 4th grader Jack Davis got a special call on Friday, August 4th, from NASA's Planetary Research Director, Jonathan Rall, congratulating Jack on his interest in serving as the agency's Planetary Protection Officer. So, yeah, there's at least one part of the government that wants to feed the curiosity and space-loving part of every kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. And not just scare the shit out of them with all the threats and such that Trump and everybody else does.
You guys would not believe the questions I've been fielding from my kid. Are we going to die? I mean, seriously. This shit is rough, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imagine being in school during 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
That was I don't have to imagine. I was.
Yeah.
I want to feel old. All the kids that were born in 2000 are 18 this year. Or next year.
Mm. And there are kids who were born in 2000 driving now.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
If you want to make us feel old, tell us what things from the 90s are 20 years old now.
Quit it. You're done.
Yep.
You're done. Oh, my God.
All right. So, now for the proper show proper. First things first. 44 years ago today, a little back-to-school block party up in the Bronx was the birth of hip-hop. So, how's it go? Well, there was a DJ who was there at that party. His name, he was gone by the name Kool Herc, DJ Kool Herc. He had managed to get he had gotten a mixer. You guys know what a mixer is, right?
Yeah.
It's it's a turntable with two wheels, on them. And you can put two different records on them. And then there's, the little switch down at the bottom, and you switch between them, and it emphasizes one record or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he came up with the idea to take two different records, put them on the same turntable, play them at the same time, create a whole new song, basically.
Yeah.
And he would actually combine and extend the instrumental breaks. So those of you who don't know, in old school hip hop, they would have the break. They would have the part where the instrumental would, slow down, speed up. And then the reason he did that was so that the folks at the block party had more time to dance.
Hmm.
And that eventually is where the name breakdancing came from.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. And that's basically how hip-hop was born.
Yeah.
Suddenly, everybody heard about this. It spread out to the Bronx, out to New York. It spread over to the West Coast. And rap was born.
Yeah.
And now here's what's really cool. Right now, have any of you guys seen the Google Doodle for today?
No.
I did.
Yeah. Holy shit, was it cool. So basically, it actually here has... what you do is you click on it, and then what it does is you are taken through it with none other than Fab Five Freddy, the legend himself.
Hmm.
And he gives you a virtual mixer and a set of virtual records. And it's got everything from the Pointer Sisters, George Clinton's computer games, Billy Squire is also in there, and he gives you those, and you can put them together and create your own beats. You can even use the cursor to scratch.
Yeah, this is a very, very involved doodle. It's really awesome.
There are achievements to unlock. I'm not joking.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! That's cool.
And, there's a tutorial, and... Five Freddy takes you through the whole process.
Yeah, this needs to be an Android game.
Uh-huh.
Give it time.
I mean, you could just load the page on your Android phone. Just play it.
So
if you wait a few weeks, there'll be thousands of Android games doing this now.
Pretty much. Probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 44 years ago today, hip-hop is born to the regret of every crusty old white guy the world over.
Several years later, it was ruined by Vanilla Ice.
I would say Snow, but technically he was actually a reggae guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You're gonna live.
Vanilla Ice just does real estate.
Yeah.
Isn't his own that the reality funniest show. Shit?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, if somebody had told me when I was, like, in seventh grade that Vanilla Ice would be laying floors on cable TV and making more money doing that, I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
I saw him, like,
about?
Showing how to put, like, the fancy texture stuff on bathroom walls so it looks nicer.
Hmm.
But it's real cheap. It's like, oh, what? What the fuck is this guy doing?
No, it doesn't.
This guy was fucking trying to tell us the difference between his song and Queen's song.
Yeah.
20 years ago.
Right. That,
and Snoop Dogg is making cheese dip with Rachel Ray.
Hmm.
It's a weird world we live in.
Yeah. It really is.
And he may or may not be boinking Martha Stewart. We don't really know.
You know what? If he is, all fucking power to him.
Yeah. They're making money. That's what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for my whistle stop story?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, so, first
now,
of all, do I
need some backstory on this?
Okay. So, do I need to explain what the Whistle Stop Cafe is or why
exactly.
It's important?
Yeah.
Okay. So, back in the, I guess, late 80s, early 90s, there was this really popular movie that came out called Fried Green Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. It was based on a novel called Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe by Fanny Flagg. Those of you who don't know who Fanny, if those of you who used to watch old reruns of Match Game, you'll know who Fanny Flagg is.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what made her famous. And so this particular film. When they made the film, they needed some place to make the movie, some place that would sort of go along with the overall, atmosphere of it. And so they chose this ho-dunk little backwoods place in Juliet, Georgia. And basically, to make the movie, they pretty much made their own little village out of it. A village that, by the way, when you're driving there, it kind of just sort of creeps up on you. Because you're driving there and you're like, there is nothing here. There is nothing here. There's just a freaking railroad track. And oh, there it is. And all of a sudden, there's just this little village all of a sudden just right there. And at that place, they've got memorabilia. They got some of the old sets. They've got antiques to sell. They got like a little movie museum you can go look at. Pictures of, behind the scenes stuff. And then, of course, they've got the actual Whistle Stop Cafe itself, which after the movie sort of wrapped up, they had, because originally what the actual Whistle Cafe was an old hardware store that this town had, and they just sort of turned it into a cafe for the movie, and they just decided to, and the thing was, because of that movie, that place is like a major tourist attraction. And so they literally took the cafe and they turned it into an actual cafe. So you can actually go there and they serve some really good food. Genuinely amazing food, I gotta tell you. It's also packed. There are fans, but there's no AC.
No.
Oh, God.
No,
don't get me wrong.
That is not okay.
I know that sounds bad. It wasn't that bad. There was still plenty of fans around. But you got to remember, this is an old, wood building. There is no AC. So there you can get stuff like, first of all, who here has seen the movie?
Yeah, I saw part of it when I was a kid.
Well, so first of all, one of the big attractions, of course, is the Fried Green Tomatoes, the namesake. And yes, they are genuinely amazing. They are delicious. They do fall apart easily, though, so you got to be careful.
Yeah.
And they And they are also
sure that would be a thing.
And they're also piping hot when they serve them to you, so you got to use your fork.
You burn yourself.
Yeah, very badly. And of course, all the stuff they got on the menu. I got the chicken fried steak, which was topped with a big layer of country cream gravy. And they do not skimp on the portions at all. Or on the gravy either, because the layer of it was so thick it was almost like icing.
Oh my god.
Fuck yes.
So I got that with some coleslaw and some mashed potatoes. Well, I think it was garlic mashed potatoes.
That's great.
Yeah. My mom got the Bennett's barbecue, which for those of you who've seen the movie, there's a little bit of an in joke there. You gotta look at the movie to what I mean, but it's the type of joke I would make. Let's just put it that way. I did not manage to finish the whole thing because it was a big cut of meat that they served me. I got like 3/4 of it done. There was still a good chunk left. But yeah, so everything was good. Of course, every restaurant has that one screamy little kid. And of course, that place was packed. I mean, it really was.
What was the wait time like?
We had to wait. The estimated time that they actually gave us at biggest was like an hour and a half. I think it actually was only, we only waited like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the thing was, it's usually really crowded on Saturdays and Sundays.
Which is when you went.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that when my, I can't remember who it was. I think it was my aunt who called them because it was her birthday. And, you know, somebody called ahead and they basically told us Saturdays is so crowded that we don't do reservations. It's just a first come, first serve thing. So, and of course, there were those bikers showing up with their blatty ass motorcycles. So that was fun. And then, of course, I forgot to mention, yes, this is called Whistle Stop for a reason. It's right next to the train tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would get annoying.
I mean, I was assuming it was going to be near a train or train-themed or something.
Yeah. But, the country fried steak was good. I'm pretty sure I'm still digesting pieces of it.
Yep.
Stick to your ribs and other things, huh?
Yeah.
Intestines. God.
That so like a genuinely good place to eat, though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it is.
But did any of it put you under?
Probably.
You mean like, was I ready to go?
Sleepy.
Nap time as soon as I got. Oh yeah, pretty much just. Pretty much almost immediately when I put the fork down.
It's called the itis. You get pissed off if you don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's true.
Of course, the summer heat probably had a piece in that, too. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Because remember, this is Georgia in early August.
Yeah.
With no AC.
And just a bunch of fans. Yeah. And keep in mind, they don't have any waiting rooms. So we had to spend the wait time outside.
Yeah.
I mean, they did have a porch, so we did have some shade.
Yeah.
But,
Man. But it sounds like it was worth it. God, I haven't had fried green tomatoes in 2 or 3 decades.
Yeah. Oh, it was. Food was great.
Awesome.
But yeah, that was my whistle stop, sorry.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, so what do we got next? Oh, yeah, so those of you don't know, Donald Trump, or at least his associates, were wanting to create sort of like a, I don't want to call it like a news channel, something like a weekly thing he was going to do, like a news of the week type thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they actually got a former CNN contributor to host the thing.
Hmm.
Kaylee McKinnon. I cannot.
Hmm. McKinnon?
No, it's Kaylee McEnany. Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, but she describes herself as a GOP spokesperson.
Hmm. Yay.
That's some honesty about the scope of the job, though.
Yeah, she was actually doing it live from Trump Tower.
Hmm.
Yeah, so this is what Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, she was doing this, so they got a new member of the team.
Hmm.
How many fucking Trumps are in this thing? Come on.
I don't know.
Are they trying to start another...
like 4 times, so...
Well, like, are they trying to start another dynasty like the Kennedys? Because they're never going to come close to that.
No. You know, some of the Kennedys were actually likable.
Yeah, some of them still are.
Right. Yeah, state media, that's coming to the U.S.
Yeah.
And
we're having problems with North Korea?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Feeling a little hypocritical.
Too much like them.
Yeah, they describe this as the real news.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of CNN, this is a fun one. There's this one guy named Jeffrey Lord on there who was just a massive shitbag. Anderson Cooper once famously said when he was talking to him on the television, he said that, you know, Donald Trump could take a dump on his desk and he would still support him.
Mm-hmm.
Still defend him, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's been having this little Twitter feed with this guy with Media Matters and basically calling them, you know, fascists and Nazis, trying to censor them. And the guy he's been in a feud with, so I think Jeffrey Lord, I can't remember if it was for CNN site or Breitbart or whatever, but he had a column talking about this guy, but he misspelled the guy's name in the byline. And so the guy tweeted him and said, dude, there's a mistake in your byline. You kind of, you know, spelled my name wrong. Just think you should know that. And Jeffrey Lord tweeted back, see Kyle. And now Jeffrey Lord is no longer employed by CNN. Nope.
Wait, what? What did he say?
Zeke Heil.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
those are things that are not okay.
Godwin's law, in effect.
S-I-E-G-H-E-I-L.
Mm.
A.K.A. the famous Nazi salute.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, it was connected to sort of hit the overall theme of him calling Media Matters Nazis, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But if you were to see that out of context... Actually, you know what? Screw it. Even in context, that looks like a pretty shitty thing to do.
Yeah, that's not okay.
You want to call him a grammar Nazi or whatever, then do that. Don't do the Nazi salute.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're working with a company like CNN.
Yeah.
Shit.
And so they basically literally just shit-canned him. I think it was today.
Yeah.
Really? Well,
and it was a very short... Yeah.
Yesterday,
and it was a very short statement, too. They were like, Nazi salutes are indefensible. Jeffrey Lord is no longer employed with CNN.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's a good statement. All sides are exposing themselves. So.
Although there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, this is not, like, the least offensive thing. This is, this straight up, in many ways, this is kind of like the least offensive thing Jeffrey Lord has said on their network. So part of me thinks that maybe they were just looking for a way to get rid of him.
Oh, they were totally looking for a way to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that also goes up with the idea that CNN is really Machiavellian about the type of people they put on their network as talking heads because they know it's good for ratings. People like a train wreck, you know?
Yeah, sadly.
True
the
that.
Description of it, that CNN treats politics like it's ESPN.
Yeah.
Where there are opposing opinions, but there are topics where there should be no opposing opinions, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is where you get, you know, Fox News talking about Jews. Are they people?
What? No.
That's a Chiron Duncan. From Fox News. That's
well, it was the idea was a reference to something. I can't remember. It was somebody who said something, basically said something really anti-Semitic, and they sort of put like his general question into some, because let's face it, that crap at the bottom of those news stations are just, they're really bad at giving you any kind of real information. So they absolutely have to keep it in like a 6 or 7 bits.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was what they came up with.
Wow. Somebody wasn't doing their job.
They weren't actually, I don't think, and I'm trying to think the best of people here. I don't think they were actually trying to question propose the question.
No, that's what the Chiron says.
No,
I
think they were quoting or something. I don't know, but it was.
Yeah. Really, and they forgot to put quote marks around it. That's the problem.
That's how you get important step. That's how you get the great photos of when like important stuff happens. You see CNN's talking about it. MSNBC is talking about it. ABC is talking about it. And then Fox News is like, oh, what's up with Hillary?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't she in jail?
Their emails.
All right, so let's see. Next up, oh boy, the U.S. Federal Climate Change Report, because they were afraid that the Trump administration may not approve the actual report, they actually leaked it online.
Hmm.
Yep.
Showing that there are people in the White House who actually, you know, give a damn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this
and what it report basically said is basically what, well, pretty much what we all already kind of knew. Yeah. 2016 was the hottest year on record, and humans are definitely contributing to it in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
in other news, water is wet and the sky is blue.
Yeah. And it's a cool report in that there's thousands of studies they have gone through together, sort of took a ton of research and evidence and all this, put it together, basically put out like the defining report on climate change.
Yeah, and they cite their sources too, so can – you see a source in this document, you can go and look it up yourself. Yeah. So,
yeah, they basically say,
what a concept.
The report is completed this year and it's a special science section of the National Climate Assessment, which is congressionally mandated every 4 years. The National Academy of Sciences has signed off on the draft report, and the authors are awaiting permission from the Trump administration to release it. Which includes, say, Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, who is a climate change denier.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're just going to, they already did leak it, and now I'm guessing the Trump administration is going to claim that's fake news.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The report concludes that even if humans immediately stopped emitting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, the world would still feel at least an additional 0.5 degrees Fahrenheit or 0.3 degrees Celsius of warming over this century compared with today. The difference between a rise in global temperature of 1.5 degrees Celsius and 2 can mean longer heat waves, more intense rainstorms, and the faster disintegration of coral reefs. And there's just a ton here. Really good read that people should read just to be up on what it all says.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason why we should not be doing this bullshit of trying to pull out of the Paris Agreement.
Mm-hmm. Which there's was so non-binding to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, stupidity. All right, so...
And more stupidity.
Yes, we got this. You knew we were going to talk about it eventually, the now infamous Google memo.
Yeah.
All right, so, Chris, you might as well go ahead and sort of
summarize.
Give the lowdown of what this is, because it's bullshit piled on top of bullshit.
Yeah, so, let's see, what is the guy's name that released this? I forget what his name is.
Don't think he was ever named.
I think he has been.
Yeah, he went
public.
I think
the second link is the one that has...
Because he got... Remember, they let him go.
Yeah.
Because of it, so...
James Damore is the one that's released this. Sent this memo around internally. I'll just start at the beginning, because you'll be able to see where this is going. I value diversity and inclusion, and not denying that sexism exists and don't endorse using stereotypes. When addressing the gap in representation of the population, you need to look at the population level differences in distributions. You can already tell he's a nerd just from the level of terms he's using here. If we can't have an honest discussion about this, then we can never truly solve the problem. It basically just goes on and says women aren't really great for the things that tech jobs need, which is stupid. It's been proven over and over again. A woman basically invented Wi-Fi and GPS and all that sort of stuff.
Ada Lovelace, wasn't she like the first computer programmer ever? Just saying.
Yep.
Yeah. And basically, obviously, it's, let's see, he has a TLDR. Google's political bias has equated the freedom from offense with psychological safety. But shaming into silence is the antithesis of psychological safety. This silencing has created an ideological echo chamber where some ideas are too sacred to be honestly discussed. The lack of discussion fosters the most extreme and authoritarian elements of this ideology. All disparities in representation are due to oppression. Authoritarian, we should discriminate to correct for this oppression. Differences in distributions of traits between men and women may in part explain why we don't have 50% representation of women in tech and leadership. Discrimination to reach equal representation is unfair, divisive, and bad for business. Basically, shouting down the sort of minority hiring practices that these companies have to try to get more diversity.
Yeah. First of all, their company, not yours. So, you know, I'm going to be honest here. I think this whole thing has been... First of all, I think the dude is a douche. I don't in any way differentiate that. I do think this thing kind of got blown way out of proportion. Because the truth of the matter is, this is just some, you know, stupid nerd who fell victim to Dunning-Kruger and suddenly thought that he was an expert on, you know, biology and gender studies and shit.
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff in here that's basically spouting off basically the same sort of stuff that men's rights activists end up.
It's a lot of the generalations, stuff like that.
So.
And, you know, it doesn't matter what his intentions were. First of all, he could have just put this on like a blog or something, and that might have been maybe slightly less problematic.
Gotten fired from that.
But this was an internal memo that he made with the Google logo on it.
Yeah.
Not okay.
No.
And, you know, if you're, you know, that's just, if you're working at one of these big tech giants and you put something out with their corporate logo on it, might I add, that they think may hurt their image, your ass is shit canned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially when the CEO of the company has to cut his vacation short to deal with this.
And then you're going to find your job replaced by a woman.
Exactly.
Which, yeah.
But,
a very fine job, anyway.
Yeah.
And already this has had a butterfly effect. He was offered a job by Julian Assange to come work at WikiLeaks.
Of course, because
the Witcher himself.
The guy has
he's inadvert he's inadvertently become a new hero of the alt-right, even though that probably was not his intention. Mm-hmm. And people within Google are now reporting harassment directly resulting from this.
Yeah, they had a town hall meeting they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Google's are writing in, concerned about their safety and worried they may be outed publicly for asking a question in the town hall. The CEO, Sundar Pichai, wrote to employees. Let's see. On Tuesday, a 4chan-related Twitter account posted screenshots of 14 Twitter profiles off Google employees, sort of the internal Google Plus group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody in Google is essentially feeding this to these sorts of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sending out these pictures, profiles, all that sort of stuff. And as a result, they are getting tons of abuse.
Yeah.
There's no surprise here at all.
Including Danielle Brown, recently named the VP of Diversity at Google.
Yeah.
Was included in the first set of 8 screenshots. By Monday, she had already locked her Twitter account after receiving an onslaught of abuse. I clicked on the link. Google's Diversity VP... Oh, shut up, Tech Insider.
Always.
Up the ad blocker shit.
Yeah.
VP has locked down her tweets after seeing racist and sexist insults. Okay.
Shocking.
Okay, the same collection of 8 screenshots made its way onto former Breitbart writer Milo Yiannopoulos' Facebook.
Oh, God. Of course. Of course he would worm his way into this somehow.
He's not done with his 15 minutes, is he?
Oh, he is trying to suck it, those 15 minutes, dry.
Yeah, on Tuesday, Gizmodo reported that a meme depicting whistleblowers being beaten was being shared on internal meme generator. Let's see. Sunday, alt-right blogger Vox Day published screenshots from the internal Google Plus.
Oh, God.
Showing
Vox
employees criticizing the Damore memo. On Monday, Breitbart published an even larger set of internal screenshots. Names and profile pictures were not redacted. Quote, what really gets me is that when Googlers leaked these screenshots, they knew this was the element of the internet they were leaking it to. Quoted from a former Google employee, tells The Verge, they knew they were subjecting their colleagues to this type of abuse. So yeah, there's some people that are apparently not too enthusiastic about the safety and well-being of their fellow employees.
I'm suspecting quite a few more firings in the near future.
Yeah.
Remember, this is Google. Their specialty is in data mining.
That's true. Yeah.
You mentioned
NSA wishes it was Google.
Yeah, you freaking mentioned Vox Day, and I already went into freaking convulsions. Because I freaking hate that man. He is an absolute shitbag of a human being.
Yeah.
He is basically the reason why the Hugo Awards have been such a shit show over the last 5 years. Look, me and Phil are sort of involved in the sci-fi community, so he may know what I'm talking about here. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but very briefly, he's literally the first person to ever have been kicked out of the Science Fiction Writers of America.
Nice.
So that meme is a spoof of this cartoon, which is the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC thing. Has a guy that says, oh, I'm Linux, and then the other two beat him up.
Yeah.
You know what?
Instead, they're inserting the people that are being harassed. So,
but yeah, it just the tech world has a virus in it, and it needs to be contained.
Yes.
Yeah.
People
and
think,
it needs to be contained, and it needs to be contained ruthlessly because,
well, you know, I mean, you could kind of see how it happens because I worked with people in the tech world. And you just know, they go home to an empty, lonely shell. Because, for the most part, it wasn't that they just hadn't found anybody. It was that nobody could fucking stand them. I mean, well, you know, the memes about the typical IT person being condescending and blah blah blah, and those memes do have some basis of reality. I mean, some of these guys
are like that, yes.
Some of these guys are just fucking assholes, and their moms don't even want them living in the basement. You know, and you avoid them, you avoid their stench, you avoid everything about them, but then they do reach out, because they're still human, they do reach out for contact with other people, and that's where they're finding the you know, alt-right shit. And they...
Because they end up finding other people like them.
Yeah, and their bitterness binds them together, mm-hmm. and then they spew it outward towards everybody else when, you know, the little bit of fucking work on their personalities, you know, maybe that would help, but they can write damn good code and they do it for fucking nothing. And that's why they stay employed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah. People like to think of Silicon Valley as very liberal leaning, but that's not really that true.
No, they're all fucking prejudiced motherfuckers who, you know, will slay you because you carry an iPhone, so I'm going to put a bullet between your eyes. You know what? Fuck you, motherfucker. Sorry. I'm getting a little...
Honestly, that's just sort of like nerd stuff.
This just got a little...
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that went to a bit of a weird place.
Yeah, but the thing is, nerd culture has always been like that.
It yeah. has been, but
it just, it's gotten worse because of the internet, and now
it's reached a level of toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
They're toxic to themselves. They're toxic to everybody else. And, you know, it comes out sometimes, and people see the seedy underbelly of the IT world.
Yeah.
And that happens when you can converge in places like 4chan and all that.
Indeed.
And I already told the whole story of 4chan and how all that shit came together. But yeah, it's just, it's the internet, man. It's it's humanity's blessing and its curse. Yeah. And we need to start.
And probably its colon.
Yeah. And probably its death at some point. But anyway, in some better news now. The town of Nipton, California has recently been purchased by a cannabis company. And they're going
to... So you can just roll up to an entire town and say, here's money, let me... Whatever.
Well, it was one of those itty-bitty little towns.
It was a town that popped up during the gold rush.
Yeah.
In California.
One of those sort of backwoods sort of...
Yeah,
I think this is like a town that is 80 acres big.
Have like maybe 30 people living in it.
Yeah. And it says here it sports a hotel, a trading post, a historical plaque, and a whole lot of passing trains.
There you go.
Not a whole lot there.
And so what's happened is that they're going to, you know, because of course everybody knows pot is now legal in California.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to set up shop in this town and basically turn it into what they're hoping to turn into, weed mecca.
Yeah, they're going to do a lot of tourist destination stuff. It only cost them $5 million to purchase it. The company is American Green. The largest publicly traded cannabis company in the U.S. They intend to modernize Nipton into an energy independent hub for, quote, the production of various cannabis-based products, as well as possible fully licensed cultivation, which includes a safe and appropriate approach to consumption.
Hmm.
So plenty of restaurants to eat your weed.
Yep.
And weed. And do all that stuff. Hmm. Company plans to start by bottling water from a nearby aquifer infused with CBD, the cannabis component linked to relieving pain and inflammation. From there, American Green hopes to attract like-minded companies, set up shop, CBD and mineral baths, dispensaries, artist-in-residence programs, culinary events, bed and breakfasts, to complete the charming small-town experience. Nipton has fewer than 24 residents. but it has a way of playing backdrop to big dreams. So this was purchased in the 80s by a gold miner from Malibu. Mm. Him and his wife purchased it, reopened the town store and cafe and renovating the hotel. They installed a solar farm and worked to make it run, the whole town run entirely on its own clean energy. And I guess
it can be done.
This new company is essentially trying to spur what they call a green rush, like the gold rush that built Nipton.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, this seems like just typical urban development to me. The only reason why it's really a story is because, you know, cannabis is involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a new frontier now that it's starting to be legalized just about everywhere. It opens up a lot of possibilities for people.
Yeah. Ooh. Now they just need to, you know, if Nevada will legalize it, well, shit.
Yeah. So.
Well, they
I
did.
Mean, especially. I mean, imagine if they legalize it. Imagine there'll be more reasons to go to Reno instead of just the hookers.
Yeah.
Yeah, this town is just off the border between California and Nevada. I think
even
I have
better.
A Google map for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, so next up, all right, so this one might need a little bit of.
Well, there's thing right here that's attached to it. It's about illegal marijuana farms.
Yeah.
In California, essentially polluting, doing a ton of pollution. Which, if you've not heard, there's a lot of federal land in California, forests and such. And for decades, I guess, gangs and such have set up shop there to grow marijuana as illegal as they can. They estimate here illegal marijuana sites on federal land in California contain about 731,000 pounds of solid fertilizer, 491,000 ounces of concentrated liquid fertilizer, 200,000 ounces of toxic pesticides that have essentially gone into the ground. This waste is potent enough to harm law enforcement officials investigating the crops. Contact with these toxic materials during raids or searches of illegal marijuana farms sent at least 5 officials to the hospital for skin rashes and trouble breathing. Hmm. And they got pictures here of just the trash-covered areas. I saw another picture of just all the sort of the cans of liquid fertilizer just piled up, just hundreds and hundreds of these cans. See, they had about 100 of these locations in these areas. And I've heard lots of stories from the Giant Bomb cast where Jeff and Ryan Davis would talk about stories of going out into the woods and running into guys with guns that are protecting these areas.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff that is just crazy to think about. Just because they're on federal land that is so huge, they obviously don't get checked all that often.
Yeah.
That these people can just sort of set up shop and just do this crazy stuff. Obviously now there's not much reason to
now you can do it officially.
Yeah. But that also costs money and time. And essentially outing themselves to try to go official. And so they go through these sort of illegal fertilizer and all this that is just more toxic than the stuff that the official people would go through.
Yep. All right.
Just sort of a crazy flip side to that.
Yeah.
All right. So this next story here is just, well, it's sweet vengeance, basically. So this woman was sort of hooked up for a date with a guy for her birthday. One of her friends managed to do it. But she found out that the guy that her friend had hooked her up with was one of those douchebags who, like, sets up, like, you know, 6 dates a night for, for like one every hour. So that's not even two time, and that's like six time.
Yeah.
That's like hiring jobs. You're setting up interviews constantly, except you're trying to do it with dates.
Yeah. So basically she went on a sort of a, this is Twitter. So she ended up putting a Twitter line on this, and you know what? I'll just go ahead and read it. All right. Says, threat alert. So I go on what I think might be a date with a guy my friend set me up on my birthday. Yes, it's a bit hazy. We meet up at a bar my friend works at. Said friend proceeds to text me telling me this guy sucks and I should run. I show up and he sucks, but I figure I'll stay because my friends are working at the bar. The 45 minutes in, his next date shows up because he double books himself and he decides he's going to friend zone me to get out of the situation. I decide to play the friend in order to help the girl feel less awkward until he exits for a moment, and then I tell her what's up. We'll call this girl Katie. Katie gets in on my quest to make this guy feel like the fuckboy he clearly is. And we chat for 30 minutes. Then the third girl shows up. We'll call her Riley. The guy leaves again, and Riley, Katie, and I team up and decide to JT must die this shit.
I love that this is like Three's Company, but there's no subtle misunderstanding to this.
Yeah. Two girls and I have now gotten both bartenders and the bar in on this and are taking this guy for all he's worth over here.
Oh, shit.
He's now explaining why he broke up with his ex, and Riley asked if he also met her on a quote-unquote group date. Don't worry, he already asked if there's going to be a rose ceremony. Two girls and I decided to be best friends, left together to go get drinks and dinner at another bar, and left homeboy with the bill.
Hell yeah.
Then I got the text.
Oh yeah.
5% on his battery.
Yeah, it says here, he goes, come outside, please! !! Do you hate me? I hope not. Couldn't tell. Message back is, you're a fuckboy. Bye! Oh, it gets better. Next tweet. JK, it's not over. The bartender just texted us to tell us homeboy is on another date. So I sent my friend over to retrieve his 8 p.m. date.
Oh, my God.
I'm stealing his dates and making them my friends, and I'm so here for it. And then she's got the GIF from that part from, what's that movie, Siblings?
Hmm.
With Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
He's like, did we just become best friends? Yep. And then they took the picture. We're now all hanging out together at another bar together. You guys, girl, we're not done yet. You guys, girl number 5 just showed up before going to meet him because my friends intercepted her and told her not to waste her time. My friend is now arguing with said guy and his current date, number 4, about why she shouldn't waste her time and just leave. There's now a picture. It's now 4 of them, and I think that's the dude in the background.
Oh, this is at the other bar.
Oh, it's the other bar. Okay, sorry. That would have been too perfect.
Yeah.
Mrs. Steal Your Girl over here. We'll keep going. Y'all. We'll call her Allie. Allie hasn't actually met him yet, now baiting him that she's still on her way, but we've already stolen her. We've gotten girl number 4, we'll call her Claire, to come over once she finishes her date so she can debrief us. Can someone bring a rose? Girl number 5, we'll call her Allie, has headed over girl best friend forever. Yeah. He just told date number 5 that she was already cut and to say hi to me at the bar when she invited him to come drink with us. Went outside to make a call and ran into him leaving number 5. He then tells me I'm the only one he wants to get to know still, but that I should tell him if he should just fuck off. I tell him there's a difference between being efficient and being an asshole, and he goes into Well, I'm a project manager. I manage my time efficiently. That was a quote. And I say there's no way to know someone in 40 minutes if you have five dates lined up. He didn't seem to like that and resigned himself to the fact that I wanted to walk away laughing at him. And then this girl and one of the other dates start texting each other. One of them says, "Oh my God, this is insane. I left obviously after he paid for the drinks, but he is insane." She replies, "I'm crying laughing. I cannot get over this." Yeah, that's Lisette is about to be Twitter famous. Lisette, for those of you who are wondering, that's the girl who's doing all of this.
Yeah.
And she replies, "He tried to tell me I should feel special because he wanted to hang out with me too. Like, did you not think I was interviewing you too? He told Lisette she's the only one he wanted. This is gold."
Oh my God.
And then we got a little bit more. He tried to say he was looking for love in his future wife. These weren't dates. They were apparently pre-date conversations.
Uh-huh.
And there's a picture of them at another bar with girl number four.
This isn't going to be like Spokoden, is it? She's not going to go after all 108.
I mean, can you not feel the type A coming off of this guy? And we haven't even...
And then finally, she ends it with a thumbs up and picture of all four of them at the different bars saying, "You win some, you lose some, but hopefully you'll make three new best friends in the process. Cheers, ladies. Don't fuck with us."
Wow.
That was good. That was good.
Didn't know there were people who were that idiotic.
Well, we just talked about that Google douchebag, so...
Yeah, it was the same guy.
Yeah, who knew people min-maxed Tinder?
Yeah.
So I hope this chick gets a movie deal, because I would pay to see that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that has rom-com written all over it. I mean, obviously.
Get Zach Galifianakis to play this guy. All right. Well, now we got some science news. We have recently found the biggest dinosaur to date. It's called the Patagotitan. The Patagotitan.
Yeah.
Patagotitan?
Patagotitan.
I'll just call it Pat.
Pat. That's better.
It actually weighed 69 tons.
Wow,
now, this thing was originally first found in 2013, but they just recently got the whole thing together, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they got pictures of one of the people just lying next to the bones to show how big it is.
Yeah.
That is...
And then they put the whole thing together for the photo shoot, which, by the way, not a warehouse or a museum. It's in an airplane hangar because it's so big.
Yeah, it weighs as much as like a 767.
Mm-hmm. How tall was this thing? 130 feet? Wait, no, that's not tall. That's how long.
Yeah, that's how long it is. Let's
Holy
see.
Shit.
Assuming that, let's see, the guy lying next to the bones is like, let's say, what's the average? Like around 5.5? 5 feet?
5'8".
5'8"?
Yeah, 5'8" for guys.
Yeah, it's like three times that tall.
Shit.
Yeah, this thing is bigger than a blue whale.
Yep.
Well, as heavy as a blue whale, but
it
bigger.
Says, speaking to journalists, they compared it to 14 elephants, a 7-story building, and 2 trucks with trailers parked end-to-end.
Yeah, I think that's how long.
Oh, my God.
That's long.
Oh my God!
So yeah, guy's all reasonable quoted, things we regularly stack next to each other.
Yeah, one guy's quoted saying, "Maybe someone can find a bigger one, but I feel like maybe this is the limit."
Yeah, it's twice as heavy as the Brachiosaurus and Apatosaurus, 10% bigger than a previous record holder, another Argentinian titanosaur called Argentinosaurus. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is about as big as dinosaurs probably got.
Because if they got any bigger, they would probably start orbiting the planet.
You know, right?
I think their physical bones could not take it.
Yeah, there's only
like this
so
thing would move
big.
Very, very slow.
Yeah,
there's only so big that an organism can get before it just collapses under its own weight.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think this was a carnivore either.
No,
it's another.
It couldn't move fast enough to be a carnivore.
Yeah, these are sauropods like Brachiosaur, Brontosaur.
Yeah. So they basically ate, the stuff off of trees. So,
because those leaves are probably like larger than us.
Yeah, and probably at the top of like a trees that are like 10 stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so another thing. There was a relative discovered who was a relative of the Jurassic croc, a fearsome Jurassic crocodile they've named after Lemmy Kilmister, the late Motorhead frontman. They named it Lemmisuccus obstuscendens. I don't want to think that succus part has to do with that one time he got a BJ while his band was performing.
Knowing
nerds,
the shoe fits.
Yeah,
it's probably just some Latin thing that I don't know about. Let's see. It lived about 164 million years ago during the Middle Jurassic period, and was a member of extinct group of marine crocodile relatives called teleosaurs. It had a meter long skull and a total length of about 5.8 meters. It would have been one of the biggest coastal predators of all time. Says University of Edinburgh paleontologist Michaela Johnson, who helped to untangle the identity of Lemmisuccus. I'm sure that's not how you pronounce that second part, but I'm going to pronounce it that way just because it's funny. It's now housed in a museum. It was originally started digging it up in the early 20th century. Originally, it was incorrectly categorized with the remains of other sea crocodiles found in the same location. That's something I've actually noticed, that sort of a theme in a lot of these recent sort of paleontology discoveries. A lot of them are sort of going through the old bones and realizing that they...
It's like, hey, wait a minute.
Well, if you've ever looked at the history of paleontology, you'll realize it wasn't exactly an exact science when it started.
No.
I mean, that's the reason why so many people used to think that, T-Rexes dragged their tails on the ground.
Yeah.
So
we got a big-ass dinosaur and a large croc.
Yep.
Who happens to be totally metal.
Yep.
So, I'm okay with this.
Yes, I am too. Speaking of something that is massively metal, there's a new animated Transformer movie coming. It is currently in the works.
Yeah, it's coming from Hasbro.
Mm-hmm.
But would be part of the film universe, the cinematic universe.
Of course. And like that, my interest immediately stopped.
Unless, of course, they get Stan Bush, and then I'll be back in.
You got Dutch!
That's not going to happen.
Maybe they'll kill them all off so they can put out more toys.
Well, didn't he? He actually made, like, another song to commemorate that.
Yeah, he did one of the earlier Transformers movies.
Yeah.
He had a song in that. So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was kind of excited first and found out this is related to Bayformer, and I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Although, if Bay isn't actually part of this, then it could be still set in the same world and actually be written correctly.
Probably not.
It would take a master draughtsman to be able to pull that off, because...
So Stan Bush had a new song called Warrior that was in Shadow Warrior 2.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Touch was in the original reboot of that.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. But,
I haven't played that game yet. I gotta try that.
You really should. They're both actually really fun. It's not quite as racially offensive as the original was.
But...
It also does third-person sword fighting right.
Yeah, the second one is kind of a bit more loot-driven.
Because everything these days is loot-driven.
All right. All right, so next up, as I mentioned much earlier, there is in fact a Munsters reboot. And it's going, and it's in the works from Seth Meyers and Jill Kargman. Basically, they're updating it to the modern day, and it's going to be set in Manhattan.
Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn.
So they're trying to blend in with the hipster crowds of Brooklyn. It would be interesting to see how it's done, since that shows kind of racism and all that. But
yeah.
They treated the... He sees the ugly one.
Mm-hmm. It was also a total ripoff of the Addams Family.
Didn't this come before? Munsters come prior to the Addams Family, I think?
No. Well, no, because the Addams Family was originally a comic strip.
Okay. Well,
it was also full of tons of dad humor.
Yeah, dad humor.
Yeah. I mean, look, if there's one thing I've known about a lot of these reboots is that sometimes they can work, sometimes they don't. It's a 50-50. So,
yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Give it the benefit of the doubt until we see otherwise, because, I don't know. The Munsters is trying to blend into hipster culture. It could be potentially hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
depends on who the cast is.
Yeah. Speaking of bringing stuff back, Fox is currently in preliminary talks about bringing back King of the Hill.
That would be really interesting to see.
See, that would actually work.
I wonder how much Mike Judge is involved with Silicon Valley right now, because aren't they going to season 4?
They're about to, yeah.
Well, like I said, it's preliminary talks. So,
okay.
You know,
they're
just
talking to both Greg Daniels and Mike Judge, and mm-hmm. both kind of have things going on right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that show could totally still work today because it's
plenty of material today.
Yeah.
About the new form of Texas compared to what they were representing back then.
Yeah, because most of King of the Hill back in that day was mostly, you know, when did King of the Hill actually happen?
97 to 2009.
2009. All right. So it's been about 7 years, 7 or 8.
It's been off the air, yeah.
A lot of stuff has happened between then. So they definitely got a lot of material to work with. Holy shit, just the way Texas has changed in the last decade is enough.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to see sort of Hank Hill reacting to that. Because there's a lot of stuff just from that they had during the show, like him being all excited about George Bush being able to vote for him. Then he shakes his hand and realizes he has like a noodle handshake.
Yeah. And
just because of that, he no longer believes in him as a candidate. So loses his voting faith. Stuff like that. Like the first 6 seasons are great because they have actual like serial storylines.
Oh, yeah.
So it just continues on. So, like, end of one season, he goes to parachute, and her chute doesn't open.
Yeah.
So she crashes, and then the beginning of the next season is her sort of in the cast for the first episode, too, and then her physical therapy after that. And there's the propane explosion at the one store, all that stuff.
I think, you know, she... Lou Wan loses, you know, her first boyfriend dies, and then she gets married to...
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting thing if they bring her back at all.
Yeah.
Because Brittany Murphy is dead now, unfortunately.
Yeah. And just maybe, I still watch reruns of that show, and it's still...
That show,
it's still funny.
I would put it up there as one of the best shows of all time.
And the thing is, it doesn't really have, like, conventional humor. All the humor is just... you know, the foibles of everyday life.
Yeah.
Living in, you know, sort of a small rural community.
The assumption everybody has is, oh, it's a show about hicks. And Texas is like, no, it's not. There's one hick, that's Boomhauer.
Yeah, and he gets all the ladies.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just about these guys just being normal people, but...
Yeah.
And all the different people, for good or bad, that they have to interact with.
Yeah. You know, they're weird, you know, they're Laotian neighbors. They have their, and their
conspiracy-obsessed friend.
Dale. Yeah. Dale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dale. I talked about how, you know, if you ever want to, if you ever get depressed or angry about, you know, some awful tweets or shit you see on YouTube, just read them out loud in Dale Dribble's voice and it will automatically just.
Yes.
You know what? I'm gonna use that next time I see one of Trump's tweets.
Yeah. Yeah,
they got to do something with that on the show.
Yeah. Anyways, let's.
Yeah.
I think that show's finally all on DVD now. You can go get that off of Amazon.
Good.
For a while, it was just like the first six or seven seasons.
God, now there could be... I can absolutely see them doing three whole episodes entirely around Hank trying to get his head around the idea of smartphones.
Yeah.
Smartphones weren't a thing.
Not really.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they were still...
2009, they would not have really had much of that in there.
No. Yeah, 2009, you know, the iPhone would have been 2 years old. And probably, you know.
It was still kind of a niche. But
and it would be nice if they didn't just pull a sort of Simpsons and just keep everybody at the same age.
Yeah.
Sort of move them ahead a bit. Doesn't have to be 10 years later or anything like that. Just move them a few years later.
Yeah.
So that Bobby's, like, in high school officially.
Yeah, you know, Bobby should be and not should be.
They've been doing that for a while because... obviously, like the serial stuff, Bobby gets older, 1 year older at least. But then they sort of stopped it. I think when he breaks up with Connie, that's like one of the last things that stays.
Yeah.
That he's perpetually like dating new girls, getting to wacky hijinks. It's like that was like one of the down notes of that sort of second half of that show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. So yeah, if any show can still be relevant, that's definitely one of them.
Yeah,
Mike Judge leveled up so hard on King of the Hill, it's not even funny. Like, after it went off the air, he brought back Beavis and Butthead, and it was almost too clever for its own good.
Yeah.
And for what it was supposed to be. It was, like, I will maintain that the most recent season of Beavis and Butthead was by far the best one, but it didn't really... I think it had a cleverness about it that didn't really tap into the original energy.
Yeah.
That was just because Mike Judge leveled up so much doing King of the Hill.
Well, Beavis and Butthead was kind of zeitgeisty to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it came out, and part of the reason it became such a big phenomenon was because it tapped into sort of the Gen X culture that was happening.
Yeah, it was kind of one of the early shows to cover that sort of thing.
Yeah. Because, like, basically they were, you know, when they started, you know, the music, you know, pop music was sort of going over from hair metal into the grunge era. And, you know, if you see, like, a lot of those old, some of those old Beavis and Buttheads where, you know, you'd see some of the old music video segments, you can see that happening in real time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so moving on, of course, as we all know, Adam West sadly died. For those of you who don't know, he did a animated Batman movie, you know, a straight-to-video one, that sort of reprised his, you know, mid-60s role. And he managed to do one more before he passed away called Batman versus Two-Face. And
it was a character wasn't in the original show.
Yeah. And it's coming soon. So
yeah, they got Burt Ward's in it, Julie Newmar, and William Shatner is playing Two-Face.
Yep. That's curious. Absolutely perfect.
This is going to be fun.
Shatner should have gotten a shot at that role in the movies.
Yeah?
Yeah, he can pull it off.
Yeah.
He's that type of character to begin with.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's one of those questions, like, you put Adam West and Bill Shatner in a room, which one of them walks out of it alive?
Inflated egos. But
yeah.
So when's this coming out?
Oh, where does it say that? October 13th.
All right.
Okay. Buying that.
All right. And it's going to get here sooner than you think. Yeah.
It's only 2 months.
Yep,
literally. Man, I cannot wait until summer is over. I seriously cannot. And it almost is. I've only got a couple more weeks of it yet.
You go into summer, you end the summer, and then it's lesser summer.
Yeah.
Then it's almost winter, and then it's God, when's summer coming back?
Wait, winter in Georgia is like, what, June in Chicago?
And then there's like asshole summer, and it's like, you know, the third week of September when it just decides to.
It's like, it's September. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, summer decides it doesn't want to leave just yet, and so it's got to make that last grand hurrah before it makes its annual exit.
It's drunk, kind of belligerent.
Yeah.
Really belligerent.
Yep.
All right. But anyway, so, all right. Next up, and this was kind of big entertainment news, Disney actually started pulling all of its movies from Netflix. And they're
not yet.
Well, not quite yet, but they're starting to.
They're announcing
on notice.
And they're going to have all of them gone by the end of next year. The reason is because they're planning to launch their own streaming service sometime in 2019.
Yeah.
They already have that. It's called the Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, how has this worked out for other people who decided that, like CBS, they were going to pull Star
Trek?
They're
still in the process of doing their thing, CBS.
Yeah.
It's supposed to launch with the Star Trek thing, and that's still a couple months off.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much only applies to us in the U.S.
Yeah.
Canada, they get it on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they also get better internet in general.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. CBS is a bit smaller than Disney.
Yeah. Disney, and they have, you know, quite a few properties that they can, you know, rely on. They have a lot of, like, I mean, wouldn't you pay $10 a month to have every single Disney Vault classic?
I kind of was paying that.
No.
No?
No.
Why do that when you can just go and get the Blu-ray?
Dude, man, they're sitting right behind me in the DVD shelves.
Well,
and you can just watch them many times.
I'm trying to play devil's advocate here.
I mean, I know, but... And then also, why would I pay for a very limited scope like Disney and, say, ABC? Still limited scope when I want broad spectrum like what Netflix has to
offer. Disney and ABC and Marvel and Pixar... And Star Wars, and probably bullshit. Anything else Disney buys by then?
See now that actually,
probably that ESPN.
Yeah, so see now that actually, because you're not just relying on the Disney Animation Studios anymore. You're also relying on all these other massive properties that they own.
Yeah.
They
talk about that in here. See, movies to be removed include Disney as well as Pixar's titles. The TV stuff is going to stay. Marvel TV shows will definitely remain on Netflix. The new platform will be home for all Disney movies going forward, starting with the 2019 theatrical slate, which is Toy Story 4, Frozen 2, the live-action Lion King... also be making a significant investment in exclusive movies and television series for the new platform. So they'll be having their own stuff as well that are going to be just on their service.
If Disney only had to rely on themselves and just had to stream up, they didn't have to worry about dealing with networks or syndication or even the FCC much for that matter. It would actually be kind of interesting to see content-wise what they could come up with.
They also announced they're going to be doing their own ESPN video streaming service in early 2018, which will feature about 10,000 sporting events each year. covering MLB, NHL, MLS, collegiate sports, and tennis's Grand Slam events.
They're announcing the NHL. I wonder what NBC has to say about that.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Well, no, because NBC has the NHL rights.
At least we think they do now.
ESPN probably has the rights to the stuff that they air.
Yeah.
To power all this stuff, Disney is going to buy a majority ownership of BAM Tech, who is the company that runs MLB's network stuff.
Yeah.
Which is some of the best in the business. They currently have a 33% stake in the company, so they're just going to say, we're going to buy the rest of it for $1.58 billion.
NHL thing. It's been 13 years since ESPN had the NHL.
So it could be interesting.
Yeah.
And if they're talking about anything like that now, that would be contract tampering, which is a no-no.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, NHL decided to do another non-exclusive deal. Maybe, I don't know, they get games that NBC doesn't have. I don't know.
All right. The last three stories are all Netflix related, so we'll all kind of just run them together. First things first, Netflix recently acquired the rights to Millar World, which is Mark Millar's personal comic book publisher. So stuff like Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Wanted, stuff like that.
None of which are included in the... some of them aren't included in this deal for Netflix because there are existing properties that have already been licensed to other...
Yeah. But
it's interesting. Gives Netflix potentially their own cinematic universe they could put together.
Yeah.
Mark Miller basically comes up with something and Netflix can do a show based on it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, and the stuff that he can come up with. Pretty much the type of stuff that only you could find on Netflix. Or maybe HBO.
Yeah,
it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. This is their first acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For as long as they've been around, they've never made any purchases, just deals with other companies.
Yeah.
Next up, Netflix also has signed a deal with the Coen brothers on an anthology of movies. That is a one hell of a coup right there.
Yeah. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, starring Tim Blake Nelson as Buster. It's going to be 6 movies, I think.
Yeah.
They just call it 6 tales about the American frontier, told through the unique and incredible voice of Joel and Ethan Coen.
And if anybody can do it, it's them.
Yeah. They got a great quote here. We are streaming, motherfuckers, said Joel Coen and Ethan Coen. So that's sort of their take on the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Now somebody needs to just get Jeff Bridges on the horn.
You see, this is why Netflix is in debt, because they keep investing in good stuff.
Yeah. And then finally, David Letterman is coming back for a 6th episode series in 2018 on Netflix.
Hell yes.
6-hour-long episodes. A long-form interview between Mr. Letterman and a guest, as well as segments in which he explores the wider world.
Yeah, this is basically David Letterman going, I need to get on the air, too much material.
Yeah. I think there's a quote here of him with his, I can't stop talking, so there's no time limit. I can just talk the ears off people until they call the police. As with many things, I'm coming from a position of great ignorance, so the well questioning is pretty much infinite. It's a perfect for me.
Yeah.
I want to say there's a bit about his family, like talking about how he decided to retire but didn't consult his family. So now all of a sudden they have to deal with him full time.
Yeah.
Here's a great ending quote. Between you and me, the beard is to cover up botched plastic surgery. He said, the beard has to stay. It would be hideous. Children would be frightened.
Dave.
Just the last 7 months combined will give him material for multiple seasons.
This is going to be a guaranteed hit.
Yeah, it really will.
Now they need to see if Jon Stewart's available.
I think he's actually, well, he's doing his comedy special, remember? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On HBO.
Yep. And oh man, that is going to be
real good.
You want to see something that can beat the ratings for Game of Thrones? Oh, there you go.
That will probably do it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I do believe we've had a show, folks.
A hell of a show. We're not radiated yet, so
yeah.
I guess we're good so far.
I looked out my window. I didn't see no mushroom cloud, so.
Yep. So far.
And again, it is dark, so. Yeah.
Any landing you can walk away from is a good one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, I would like to remind our viewers,
listeners.
Yeah, I would say, though technically, if you're, you know, listening to us off of your laptop, then kinda.
Ish.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Ish,
screw it. I'm abandoning the joke, abandoning ship. Point is, on top of iTunes, you can also subscribe to our little podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, your toaster oven, your shower head, your printer, and if you start up on more and look really closely at the engine block, you'll probably start hearing us, too. And, of course, I would also like to remind all of our listeners, our listener numbers have been growing. And we want to know why that is, because honestly, we can't believe anybody wants to listen to us for about two plus hours.
So, how did you find us? Email us with the answer.
Yes. Yep. You can email us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got that link down at the very bottom of the show notes. And I do believe that's going to be it for us this week. Barring nuclear war, you will probably be hearing from us again next week. So, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins.
Stop us.
Yeah. And for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, and Teresa Sammons, I'd like to say goodnight. If you start seeing Vault Boy, panic.